I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Victoria.
And I'm Hannah.
And simply put, we review cookbooks. We take one book for each episode and both cook a couple of dishes, then discuss what we liked, more likely what we didn't like, and give it a rating out of 5. Like all the best recipes, it's pretty simple.
And if you love what we do, we're now on Patreon. This means if you'd like to support us, your subscription will help cover the podcast costs from the books themselves, the ingredients of what we cook, and in return you'll get some fun stuff. To find out more, visit our website, thecookbookcircle.com, or you can find the link in our show notes. Thanks, friends. Now for the podcast.
Hello. Hi. Oh, Hannah! Yeah, we never rehearse who's going to say hello or, you know, discuss it, but it always works out great, I think.
2 seasons in where we've really smashed it.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
Obviously, we had recorded our last episode, like, in early Jan, I think, and we put it out then. After a slightly longer hiatus than we had planned, because my very lovely mum passed away, which has obviously been a shit time, but I guess I'm saying it now because we put it on Instagram so that people know, but we realise that not all of our listeners are on Instagram, so that is to explain our absence. But what I do have to say is that when we did put it on Instagram, our listeners are so nice. They are the nicest people in the world. Thank you so much for all of your lovely messages. It was just incredible. Like, people that I didn't even know from, like, uni and stuff got in touch. Or, like, people I've lived with, like, 10 years ago. And I didn't even know they listened to the podcast. And just sent, like, these really cute messages about, like, how they enjoyed stories. But my mum, that one about, like, I think I said it in a Nigella episode, where mum and I had been watching, like, a Nigella TV show together and realised that she made this big, like, Yorkshire pudding in a big tray with, like, and we had it with, like, mascarpone and honey and stuff, and they said that they really liked that story. And, yeah, it was just the nicest messages. Obviously, my mum was, everyone thinks their mum is the best cook in the world, but I actually think my mum was the best cook in the world and definitely the best baker. She probably fostered my love of focaccia. She can make it with her eyes closed. So, yeah, just thank you, everybody, for such lovely messages. And thank you, Vic, for supporting me through a very shit time. Love you.
You are welcome. I also just want to say on Hannah's mom that I am incredibly proud of Hannah and her sisters. Hannah has 3 sisters. You probably remember that from previous episodes of for their, just for they've been through a lot these past few weeks. Mm. And I'm proud of them all. And yes, I can't wait to hear more of Hannah's stories about her mom's cooking. There's a photo that I remember you showed me, or maybe you put it up on your Instagram at some point, of like your mom is cooking on a barbecue and you're like running around, like I don't know what you're, I can't remember what you're eating, but you're eating something and you're like, you're having a barbecue, and it like, it really stuck in my mind, and that's how, in my head, that's like how I picture your mom and like your life growing up.
Yeah, yeah, honestly, and that picture is so great, I should put it on our Instagram. It's mom in the background, yeah, on a barbecue, and it's me walking towards the camera eating something that she's obviously like given me off the barbecue, and I'm thrilled with myself. But yeah, she used to make, like, she used to make the best birthday cakes for me when I was growing up. Like, my birthday parties were the best anyway, because, like, usually birthday parties, like, kids would get shoved into a room with the TV on or something, but my mum would organise all these great games. And then she would make, like, a couple of years in a row when I was a kid, she made this great birthday cake that was, like, the base was all, like, Cadbury's flakes. And then the top was, ooh, like ice cream or something. So it was like a an icebox, wow, cake thing. And she would do it in like a heart-shaped mold. And everyone was like, oh my God, this is the best cake ever. Yeah, so lots of really good memories. She used to make a really good chicken pie when I was a kid, and I used to eat meat as well. So yes, lots to talk about there. But anyway.
We might do an episode on it. But yes, that's why we've been away. Yeah. So thank you for everyone's understanding and very lovely messages, which brought a tear to my eye, some of them as well, because
so cute.
Yeah, they were really lovely.
You guys are the best,
so thank you. Yeah, really appreciate no. you.
I'm not crying, you're crying.
I just got something in my eye.
What have you been looking at, enjoying, doing?
We're changing the subject. I'm going to talk, as I often do, about TikTok today before we get into our books. I am still, for those listening, obsessed with TikTok. I don't get enough food content on there, and I feel sad about that. It's a lot of, like, you know, mom content and, like,
You need two separate accounts. That. Maybe you should have one that's like,
I know.
Yeah, you can do all the food stuff. Or, well, you're not actually posting on TikTok, are you? You're a little TikTok lurker.
No, it just knows that I'm a mom. But that stuff is so boring. But food stuff is not boring to me. Anyway, I saw these things. I don't know if they went viral or whatever, but I saw quite a few people making them. These like crispy dumpling things. Dumpling alert. I love them. They're probably dumpling. My favourite food.
my little dumpling.
But they are... So, you know, like, if you have, like, summer rolls?
Yes.
Not spring rolls, summer rolls. They have that, like, that translucent rice paper.
Yeah, love them.
Right. Yes. Well, I don't love them as a summer roll. However,
you like them as an autumn roll,
an autumn roll or a spring roll. that's a different pastry, lads. So there that you use that, and then you make some kind of filling. And I made a filling of like just all the vegetables that I had in the house, and yeah. Some you're supposed to put, like, well, in the recipe I saw you put like tofu in it, but I didn't have any tofu, so I just put some bean, like butter beans, in there for a bit of a
nice
protein. Mix it with, you know, whatever flavors you want. Mm. I put like a load of kimchi in there, some miso, some, you know, that stuff. So you make your little filling, so that's all finely chopped and put in, and then you kind of soak. Because so those rice papers come like hard, right?
Yeah.
Like in like circles. And so you soak them just for a little bit, put them flat, put some filling in and wrap them up like a little parcel, like a little present.
Yes. Nice.
Double bag them.
Double bag.
Double bag. Put two of those sheets on for extra safety and no leakages. And then you fry them in a pan so they get crispy either side.
So it's like a cross between a spring and a summer roll. A spummer roll.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yes. A sprummer.
A sprummer from the Brummy?
Yeah. Brummer. Yeah. And they're delicious. I mean, annoyingly, on all the TikTok videos, they've got that knife... you know, like crispy rub that, to show you how crispy, and it does my fucking head in.
Yeah.
But anyway, they are very crispy, and some TikTokers said that you can make them in the air fryer, and I would definitely try that again.
Oh yeah.
And then other people, instead of just a load of fun vegetables or whatever, have been putting like noodles in the middle.
Ooh.
Like making noodles, and I was like, that's that seems like a texture sensation to me. Like chewy noodles in a crispy shell.
Yes, because don't traditional summer rolls a lot of the time have those very thin rice noodles in them too? Or maybe they're not rice.
Yes, yeah, no, I think you're right. Like they're quite, because I guess it's often raw vegetables as well, isn't it?
Yes.
In the spirit, yeah. So I guess it's kind of crunchy and nice.
They sound yum.
They were. I should have taken a photo to put them on, but they were really good. And you could just make them with literally anything you have.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure the rice paper things I just got from the Chinese supermarket, and they weren't very much money, but no, they were just a fun little way of using up vegetables and something I'd seen. And I love a crunchy dumpling.
Cute.
So I reckon that's a TikTok thing that I can absolutely get behind, and I will keep you all posted on my future forays into TikTok viral foods. No butter boards over here, probably. Oh, but whatever's God. Next.
Fucking butter boards. Boy, that feta pasta that was everywhere.
Feta pasta.
Jesus Christ.
They started selling it in M&S, and that's when you know.
Did they?
Bad vibes. Yeah, you could buy like in the summer, I think it was, you could buy like, yeah, basically it didn't have the pasta, but it was like feta and tomatoes, and you like baked it as like a starter, whatever. But yeah,
love,
like, I'm telling you, this Christmas coming, 2023 Christmas, butter boards will be on like menus for Christmas dinners everywhere. It's like, you'll go out with your friends or family or work, you know. Well, my work is my family, I know you guys know that, but so I don't, you know, separate the two, but yeah, there'll be butter boards there.
I just cannot be arsed with them. I love butter very much, as we all know, but I just don't see the point. I think it's for people with too much time in their hands. It's the Gwyneth Paltrow's of this world. Although hers wouldn't be butter, it would be like fucking coconut oil or some shit.
Flaxseed.
Flaxseed boards. Watch out. Hot trend for 2023.
It would help you, you know, exfoliate your board after the butter. Getting all those crevices.
Oh, God.
Flaxseed eggs. That comes up a lot in like vegan cooking, doesn't it?
Yeah, I never dabbled actually in all my vegan baking with flaxseed. But
what do you use instead of eggs in your vegan baking?
Can't remember. Like, I remember there was a lot.
What's it called? Aquafaba?
Yes, I've used aquafaba. I've used there's a lot of coconut oil usually and stuff. But actually, I thought. My kind of principle a lot of the time is, if you had to replace too many things, then it probably wasn't going to work. So I would try to veer towards more like stuff that you could just do without having to, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, stuff that used like oil or stuff instead. But anyway, we're not here to talk about vegan cooking.
Or we are not. Oh, are we? No, we're definitely, definitely not.
No, I'm not either. This is our last full episode of season two.
Woohoo!
Woo!
I mean, you know, not woohoo. I've, you know, enjoyed this season, but we'll save that for the next episode.
Yes, before, you know, anyone fears we won't be taking as long a break, we're fully refreshed, so we'll probably
no babies.
So, yeah, more about that soon, but we'll do like a wrap-up episode next, which I think will be fun because we have realized that we're coming back to some books more, we've had some thoughts, so I think that'll be interesting to discuss. But today we're going to talk about one Ms. Diana Henry. She's from Northern Ireland,
come,
you know,
full circle.
Making her a Gemini.
Is she?
Yeah.
Look, making her a Gemini.
That's a Nadine Coyle reference for anyone who doesn't know. And Vicky is like low-key obsessed with Nadine Coyle.
I am. You are.
No, any content that you see around Nadine Coyle absolutely cracks you up.
It's so funny. Like, a worker with flyer. Also, do you know that she was like married or like had a baby with this the American footballer that does all their NFL news in the UK? And how did they talk to each other? Like, she, a lot of the time, you cannot understand what she's saying. As someone who lives in the UK, I can't understand what she's saying. And, like, Americans, even more so. I'm sure it's fine.
Well, she was with
stereotypical.
She was with that guy from Desperate Housewives for a bit as well. That Jesse Metcalf creature.
You know, Jesse Metcalf is, is it him? He's in my show where they're all Irish.
Oh God, Chesapeake Shores, whatever that show is that you watch.
They're all Irish. Jesus. My nan used to make the blueberry pie. Like, really bad Irish accents.
Oh my God. Anyway, we digress again. Diana Henry, I think we mentioned this at the end of the last episode. When we hosted our first ever in real life cookbook circle meetup, wow, we had a snappier name than that, I promise. First ever in real life cookbook circle meetup. We tried to pick a chef that had lots of, that was well known and that had lots of recipes online so people didn't have to buy a book or whatever and was well loved, and that we picked Diana Henry. So everybody brought dishes from her online stuff or her books.
Yeah, that was in the halcyon days of January 2020, when the world had not yet
imploded.
Closed down.
And we used to sit beside each other at work and we would like pretend to work but actually be planning cookbook circle meetings.
Now we sit on Zoom and pretend to just joking if our bosses are listening. Hi guys,
so,
love you.
Shall I tell you a little bit about Ms. Henri?
Please. Oh my God, imagine people talking about Thierry Henri.
Well, as I said before, the Irish don't like Thierry Henry, so we won't be talking about him.
And Diana Henry clearly wouldn't. Well, she's Northern Irish, just to say they're separate countries.
Thank you. So, actually, she talks a little bit about her love of food as a child at the start of the book that I'll be talking about, which is How to Eat a Peach. But, so basically, she sounds like a cool kid, right? When she was like 12 or 13, she was just really interested in food. She said that her mum used to cook lots. She would have lots of people around all the time and she'd like put out these great spreads of kind of buffet style food for people coming around, and that her mum did all these cookery classes. So she would do like an Austrian cooking class, or she read loads of Cordon Bleu books and stuff as well. So she would put out quite, you know, quote unquote exotic food for the time, and people loved it. So that was obviously where she got her inspiration. But then she started cooking, Diana herself started cooking meals for her friends at like age 12 or 13. Yeah, and she says at the start of my book how she's just always loved menus and making menus, and she has like a little, when she was 16, she started to keep a book of menus, and she would just like dream up meals and menus to cook. She wouldn't necessarily make them, but she just would fantasize about like these menus.
That is so cute. That is the cutest thing I've ever heard. I want to do that for the rest of the day.
you do that. and then she went to France. Ding, 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 French alert. Age 15 on exchange. And then she learned a lot there. She was staying with a family who introduced her to like olive oil and, you know, good produce. And that kind of had a big impact on her. She actually talks a little bit about her first dinner party when she was 16. And it wasn't appreciated by her 16-year-old guests. So she filled the dining room with so many candles that the first person to arrive asked whether they were going to celebrate Mass. So, like, And she's like, I'm not even Catholic. And then another expressed concerns that we were having potato for dessert, and it was being served in pineapple shells, but it was like this pineapple sorbet that she'd made and put in pineapple shells, but the room was so dark with all her candles that nobody, people thought that it was like mashed potatoes. So, yeah, obviously she... Yeah, really loved cooking quite young, but she didn't actually plan to be a food writer or have a career in food. She thought she might be an actress or a lawyer. And then her early career was actually as a TV producer, and she would work on, she worked on some food related shows like TV Dinners with Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall. I don't remember that one, but I'm sure he was like, you know, banging on about how not to eat TV dinner. Pick some fucking, I don't know, organic artichokes from your garden or some shit.
So have a TV dinner, but eat it at your allotment.
Yeah. Our friend Laura, actually, who we work with on the Stolen Stitches collaboration, is low-key obsessed with Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall and always sends me all these reels of him,
like,
seductively eating parsnips in his bloody conservatory. I think she's taking the piss, Laura, you can clarify. So then when she was working on this, she's during the weekend she started cooking from books like Julia Child, Claudia Roden, and she was living near Edgware Road in London, and she would go food shopping there, and she said you could just pretty much get everything. So that was kind of a big influence on her.
Nice.
And then after she had her first child in 98, she decided to become a food writer. I mean, wow. Love that. Wish I could do that.
Same as me.
Yeah.
I just had my first child.
Yes, well, now you can become a food writer. So there's not much about... That's the rite of passage, right?
That's what I heard, yeah.
There's not much about that journey from, like, what she... how she kind of did that and how she pursued it, but... It wasn't until 2002 that she published her first book, which was called Crazy Water Pickled Lemons. Crazy Water Pickled Lemons. I'm not sure how to arrange my intonation for that one.
Is there a comma in that?
No. Crazy Water Pickled Lemons.
Sounds like an AI has written that.
Yeah, an Ottolenghi book. So, yeah, that was recipes from Middle East, Mediterranean, North Africa, which is a cuisine that, like, she... Although there was a New York Times piece that was kind of comparing her and Ottolenghi in a way, which is not a comparison that I thought I would see, but it was just about how Diana Henry kind of loves those kind of influences of the Middle East and stuff, and has not normalized, but, like... incorporated a lot of ingredients like figs and quinces and spices like cardamom and chili and whatever into her recipes. So that was her first book. Since then she's published 8 more, two of which we're going to talk about, but they're quite varied. Like this, there was one on just chicken, I think. It was called A Bird in the Hand.
She
great name.
Loves chicken.
There's like Salt, Sugar, Smoke. Then there was most recently Simple in 2006. She's churning them out, man. There's two there in 2014 that was sort of published in the same year. Then one in 2015, that's the chicken one. Another in 2016, and then 2018, 2019. So she's like a machine.
Wow.
And she also, she writes a column for Stella magazine in The Telegraph. We won't hold that against her. And she was named, I'm joking, she was named the Fortnum and Mason Cookery Writer of the Year in 2013. She won the Guild of Food Writers Cookery Book of the Year Award in 2015. She's just won loads.
Wowee.
So she's really, yeah, just forged this amazing career in food that I'm frankly... quite envious of.
She's obsessed with cookbooks as well, right?
Yeah, she is, isn't she?
Yeah, there's a BBC Food Programme episode about people who are obsessed with cookbooks, and she is on it.
Where was our invite?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was pre-cookbook circles.
For you.
Birth. But yeah, it's her, and then these other people that have, like, you know, had to build structures in their home to house their cookbooks, talking about how they're obsessed with them, and I loved it.
Remember when we spoke to Julie Gibbs and her, like, amazing wall of cookery books?
Yes,
that's the dream.
That is the dream.
I think I need to get another bookshelf soon. It's starting to get a bit weighed down. Anyway, that's Diana.
Yeah, love her.
Yeah, she's pretty...
She's brilliant.
Great.
And so we are doing, like you said, she has so many books. We are doing two different books today. So I'm going to talk about From Oven to Table.
From oven to table.
Crazy oven to the crazy table.
Crazy water, pick a lemon. I'm currently pulling the sticker off, which is why there's that noise. I'm talking about How to Eat a Peach, which was the book right before that.
But what about your book?
Bit of a book.
Still got it, lads.
Back in the gate. The How to Eat a Peach has a slightly fuzzy cover, like a peach.
That's how does that make you feel?
Vic doesn't like this. I told her this already, and she's not sure about it. I'm stroking it like a cat.
You are stroking it like a cat.
I just think that's so fun.
Yeah,
I mean, my dog's hairs are currently like
it's not actually furry, it's just dog's hair is all over it.
JK, I clean my house, but I think it's fun. It's not creepy. When you're up next weekend, you can feel the book if you're lucky. If you buy me dinner first,
God. I am going to buy you dinner. You'll probably hear that about our next Times episode, because we are going to see each other for the first time in ages.
Yes. And it's a very cookbook circle.
The first time in 2023?
Yeah, that's shit, isn't it? That's terrible.
That is shit.
It would, yeah, if I hadn't been home for ages, it would have been sooner. But yeah, we're. I think this is an epic cookbook circle day, because we're going to eat a couple of meals together and we're going to see James Acaster. Our off menu hero.
At a gig. We're not just going to dinner with him, unfortunately.
Sadly not. That's still our career goal. Tell me about your book.
Mine is not furry. Oh. And I don't know if I'm disappointed or happy about that, but it's not. It's called From the Oven to the Table. It is textured, though, the front.
Okay.
Embossed, textured, and has
this is us trying to do ASMR. This is the new running your knife off of your crispy roll. We rub our books.
I'll rub your knife on my crispy roll.
Wow, we're both of it. What's wrong?
We both drank a lot of coffee this morning. There's a lot of lack of sleep going on in various households on the call. So, to be fair, we're making innuendos, but it is a bit of a sexy book. Like, in terms of, I mean, like, it's not got innuendos in it, but, like, you can see, like, it's very, like, dark. Like, all the photography is very, like, dark, moody. Very sultry, moody. Like, it's not...
Is moodiness bright sexy, by the way? Is that where I'm going wrong?
Well,
too maybe. Damn cheerful.
Maybe to me. I think because, like, so, essentially, it's a one-pot cookbook.
Love it.
Right? Everything is just, put it all in one pot, goes in the oven, or two or three. But you basically get to the point in each recipe where you put something in the oven and forget about it, and then it comes out cooked.
Great.
That's how ovens work, for those of our listeners who don't know. And it's, yeah, she talks about, basically, it's all about one pot cooking, simplicity, simple ingredients as well. Like, there's nothing in here that's particularly... out of the ordinary.
Nice.
In terms of ingredients. There's a couple of things, but generally she gives a substitution or something like that. And it's split into the following chapters. Simple suppers, my favourite ingredient, spoiler alert, it's chicken thighs. And this woman loves chicken more than I know anyone to have ever loved chicken, but specifically thighs. I mean, you know, I love that. I love chicken thighs. Asparagus to aubergines, which is spring and summer vegetables, beetroot to bitter leaves, autumn and winter vegetables, cook until tender, which is grains and pulses, weekends, high days and holidays. I'm not sure what high day is.
It's a crazy wash of pickled lemon.
Oh, that's what she's cooking in there. And then something sweet. So it's all, yeah. And they're all basically all one page recipes. And like I said, very interesting, like photography. Lots of meat in here.
Really?
There is like, there's those vegetable sections, but a lot of meat, particularly chicken. But there is also poussin, which is small chickens. there's whole chickens. And there is lamb. And
not related to a chicken. Friend of the chicken.
Friend of the chicken, born at a similar time in the year. So yeah, shall I tell you what I cooked?
Yes, please.
So I cooked two things.
Okay.
And I think before talking about these things, I think I'm at a stage in my life right now. I'm in a season of my life right now where for some reason I'm a bit fed up of one pot cooking.
Mate, I think that you've got, like, haven't you kind of got the one pot books? Like, whenever we've done two book episodes, I think for Rukmini Iyer, yes, yours was one pot one as well, yes, and someone else's.
I just, and like, they're great for various things, but like, I just, my heart sinks a little bit, like, reading these recipes, because like, I don't know, it just, there's only so much you can do,
yes,
putting something in the oven or in one pot or whatever it is.
The textures kind of all become one.
Yes.
Textures,
and I like texture, as we know from my dumpling stories recently.
Texture queen.
As in 10 minutes ago. I'm a texture queen. I love a crunch.
Love a crunch.
And I just think that yeah.
Okay.
It's a bit leftoversy. Like, all I'm thinking about is, oh, I'm going to eat this for the next 3 days. And that's fine. We love not wasting food.
We do.
Very important.
And I guess at a certain point, we are exposing ourselves to a number of cookbooks in the name of the greater good so that nobody else has to. We have more of each type of cookbook. So but for somebody, they might just have one pot cookbook.
And yes,
that serves all of their one pot needs. We,
yes,
just have been maybe a little bit overexposed,
yeah,
to our vocation.
I think it's a texture thing. I don't know. But anyway, so I'm just going to preface that with that. So
okay,
if I don't seem very excited about these things, then that's why.
Gotcha.
It's not that these are bad recipes or whatever. So the first one is chicken and rice with coconut, green chilies, coriander and lime.
Nice.
So this is actually one of the most simple, I think, in the whole book. And I've been through this book quite a lot because I was struggling to know what to do. So it is, you get chicken thighs, bone in, skin on. She says 8. You kind of just brown those off a bit, get some of the fat out, just to cook them off, put them on a plate. So you've got like a schmaltzy
nice
base in your kind of wide pan that is then going to go in the oven, flame proof. You've got a chopped onion, you kind of put that in, soften it up, and then add garlic, ginger, ground coriander, ground cumin, and fresh green chilies.
Nice.
So that's a nice,
good
so cook
flavors
that on the like schmaltzy. Yeah, really nice. And then she says to add your vegetables, a squash and cauliflower. So it's like 200 grams of squash and 100 grams of cauliflower. But she does also say in the intro that you could just do one or the other depending on like what you have. So I just did squash because I had a squash,
mm-hmm,
and I'm not going to just use 100 grams of cauliflower.
Nope.
I'm not going to buy a cauliflower for that. So you add that in, cook, and then you put the chicken, like rest the chicken back on top with skin side up on top of that.
Gotcha.
No, you don't. Before that, you add rice, just basmati rice, fresh coriander, lime zest, lime juice, and lime leaves.
Oh wow, limey.
I only had dried lime.
Lime and limey.
Dried.
Wow. Sorry, I don't know what that is.
Well, all the accents are coming out today.
I'm so sorry.
What could be next? And then you add the chicken back. So you're cooking all that lovely, you're kind of cooking all that lovely rice in the chickeny veggie goodness. Love nice. A bit of that, as we know. I love a chickeny rice. You put the chicken back in, and then you heat. So you've got some chicken stock. You've got, let me tell you how much, 400 mils of chicken stock and then 300 mils of coconut milk.
Oh.
And you mix those together and you warm those together in a saucepan separately.
Right.
So 2 pans for this. And then you add that in to your pot with your rice and chicken and everything. And then you put it in the oven at 180 degrees for 35 minutes.
Wow.
I love that idea, by the way, of like mixing the coconut milk and chicken stock.
Yeah, that is great.
Yeah, like to cook the rice in, because it just sounds, and it is like so nice. Makes your house smell amazing, as you can imagine. Like all that coriander, lime, chicken, coconut milk, and you just put it in, and obviously, like then, so the juice is all soaked up by the rice. It's the chicken is cooked. They've got just little crispy tops.
Yeah.
And she says to serve it with a little bit of yogurt and chutney.
Nice. So kind of Asian-y inspired flavors.
Yeah, exactly. And it does feel fresh. You serve it with yogurt and chutney, and you've got more fresh coriander and a bit of squeeze of lime over the top of it for just that, like, to cut through it. Because I guess it is quite rich. It was really nice. I would absolutely make this again, or something kind of inspired by this, with whatever, if you've got chicken thighs. Because also that's the good thing about chicken thighs is that they're cheap, especially bone-in, skin-on ones.
I
don't like chicken breasts anyway, and they're 3 times the price. So if you can get them, you can cook loads together, and it will last. It was really nice. I think it was milder. The taste of the rice and everything was milder than I'd hoped. Mm. And that might be because that's just how it's supposed to be. Or it might be because the chicken stock I've got at the moment is not great. Like, it's a bit shit, a bit cheap. I need to get... And I made something last night, not from any of the cookbooks we're talking about, but I made something and I felt the same about it. And I think I just need to get better chicken stock is maybe the answer to my problems here.
It does make a difference, doesn't it? I can't really believe you're not making your own at home.
Well, you know, maybe that's for next season.
100% taking this. I think, making your own stock is, like, one of the, like, that's quite a chefy thing to do. Like, a lot of people post about it on Instagram and TikTok or whatever, but, like, who is actually, I'd love to meet somebody who's working or, you know, has a kid and who has the time to, like, make their own stock. It's a lot.
My grandma used to make turkey stock from the Christmas turkey, and that's a memory that burnt into my brain of, like, the day after Christmas, like, that would be, like, on the hob, like, boiling down for hours and hours and hours, and obviously it makes it smell lovely, but I thought that, well, a turkey stock is gonna last from a turkey is gonna last you for the whole year anyway. Right? But yeah, like you say, no one has got the time for that.
Nope.
But no, this was nice. Very, like, filling. Flavours, like, went well together. Mm. It was nice. And then the second thing I made as a little... I feel like... I don't know. This is very different to things I've usually made, right?
Ooh.
Is the creamy gratin of smoked haddock, tomatoes and potatoes.
Oh, that is unusual for you. Mm. Fish. I feel like you don't usually go for fishy dishes.
I don't. But I love a smoked fish. And this, just for some reason, I kept coming back to it. I was looking at it, I was like, oh, this looks really, really nice.
Yes.
And a bit different, like you say, and just could be fun to do.
Yeah.
I had a bit of a nightmare with this. Not that the recipe was absolutely fine, like, and it, again, very easy. But, so basically I had two disasters. One... We're having a salad crisis in the UK at the moment, and I couldn't get tomatoes. And Hannah knows about this because I was voice-noting her all day on the day I was trying to make it. I went to, like, 6 different shops, and I could not find one tomato, fresh tomato. And I had all the other things for this, like the smoked haddock, the you know, the cream, it's got quite a lot of cream in it and all that kind of stuff. So I ended up having to buy tinned tomatoes. I bought tinned cherry tomatoes in the end with the skin on, and like washed them and left them to dry and used those, because I was like, I can't omit this, but also I have no idea when I'm going to get tomatoes again.
It's bizarre. I mean, we do bitch about buying tomatoes out of season, but I don't think that that's, you know, it's been a decision by the supermarkets everywhere that they're just going to stop.
No, it's some kind of, it's right. Morocco, apparently. Morocco's got snow. And we are no longer in the EU, and so we don't have any buying power to buy them from elsewhere, like the rest of the European Union.
But so, we have that extra $350 million a week for the NHS, so it's
all we fine. Got our country back, yeah, so yeah. That's what's so, really important to know. So that was the first disaster, and I'll come to the second disaster in a minute. So this, so your big effort in this one is you have to mandolin 700 grams of waxy new potatoes.
Oh, do you have a mandolin?
No, but I do. There's a mandolin fingertips? Thing. No, I've really cut my finger on this one. I used the side of my grater. My box grater has like a mandolin thing, and that worked absolutely fine. I was going to use, like, a long time ago, Hannah and our friends bought me a grater and slicer for my KitchenAid attachment for my KitchenAid, but okay. I didn't know if it was going to be thin enough. Because I was looking at it, and it's... Anyway, she says they have to be absolutely paper thin, otherwise they won't cook.
Right.
So, anyway, so that took about 5 hours, and, you know, half my finger.
And it was new potatoes as well, right? So they're really small.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So that was fun. And so that's done. And then you cut the fish. So it's 500 grams of smoked haddock fillets. The price of fish,
really?
Yeah, anyway, it's fine. 400 grams of tomatoes, just mentioned tomatoes, thyme, double cream, 500 ml of double cream, garlic, some mustard, some cheese, cheddar cheese and parmesan cheese for the top. Nice. So you mandolin these potatoes, and then you chop your tomatoes in thin slices. and
you're washed from a tin cherry tomatoes.
Yeah. That was a terrible, the cherry tomato situation was a terrible idea. Also, what about this sun that's coming in on my video right now?
Vic's got like an angelic Instagram filter glow.
I know, I love it. Yes, so you slice all that, and then you put you kind of layer half of the potatoes and tomatoes on,
mm-hmm.
like in a like a gratin dish, but yeah. I just use like an oval. I have an oval or creuset, and then you heat up to just before boiling the milk with the garlic and the mustard.
Right.
And did I leave that for too long, and did the cream go all over my kitchen?
Oh no.
Yes.
Oh no.
Yes.
Creamy kitchen.
Did I do some big swearing about that? Yes. But anyway, it's fine. I had extra cream because we lost a lot in that disaster. But then there was a lot of cream. A lot of tea towels met their fate in this.
And you don't even really like cream. So if you're like cleaning up the cream, you're like,
oh, yeah. Oh my God. So anyway, so you do that. You pour half of the cream once that's, you know, the warmed up cream over the potatoes and tomatoes, then you do a layer of the fish,
mm-hmm.
you lay the fish on top of that, and then more potatoes and tomatoes, more cream,
gotcha,
lots of seasoning in between that, and then the cheeses on top,
right,
cheddar, parmesan, then in the oven for about 45 to 50 minutes.
Nice.
Until the potatoes are cooked, you leave it to kind of sit for a minute, and then serve. It was nice. It was really nice. Again, the flavours felt milder than I'd hoped.
Oh, yeah.
And again, this could have been, there's obviously no stock issues here, but maybe the fish wasn't as smoked as I thought it was going to be, or maybe I didn't cut it small enough. I don't know. But I liked it, and I, you know, ate it. It tasted nice. a second day and a sec, you know, afterwards.
Yeah.
Because once they've kind of, it's kind of sat for a while. I thought there was going to be too much cream for me, but also I don't like with, I like gratin fine, but, well, I like it, but I thought it'd be, when I first served it, I was like, oh, is it too much? Is it too like liquidy? But it wasn't, it was fine. And again, better the second day. I think it obviously would have been better with fresh tomatoes, or maybe I didn't infuse the cream as much as I should have, or maybe the infused cream went all over the floor and the non-infused cream. But anyway, it was nice. I wasn't but no, I liked it, and I don't think I've ever made, well, I've definitely never mandolined 700 grams of potatoes before.
Nor will you again, probably.
I'm not sure I will, but you know, I probably use some kind of machine for it in the future. But no, it was good, and I'm glad I made it. And I, like I said, like, I'm sure also it would have been absolutely 1,000 times better with fresh tomatoes. But
I like that the tomatoes were in there though, because otherwise it's got more like fish pie vibes, doesn't it? Quite yes. creamy and bland. But at least maybe the tomatoes kind of brought some freshness.
Yeah, they did. Like, broke it up, and it also, that breaks, also breaks the colour up of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not just like, exactly, say, like fish pie. It was good. Tell me about your book and what you made.
So, my book is How to Eat a Peach, with the aforementioned fuzzy cover. It is, we mentioned her love of menus, and it's basically like a book of menus. So,
how fun!
The photography is so beautiful, like, just of the produce, even the cover is just this gorgeous, like,
yeah, the cover is beautiful.
Yeah, the light coming in on a bowl of peaches. So in the intro, she says that she gets texts all the time on like a Friday night, Saturday morning, being like, shit, like, what can I make that goes with this dish? Or like, yeah, what starter should I make? She says everyone's always looking for like a quick starter. So I guess she has probably compiled all of that advice into here. But she's, well, what's nice in the intro is like these little tips that she gives. So she says, like, you know, you don't have to do a starter. I never do a starter. I think like it's fine to give just like some olives and crisps and keep people happy with it.
Yeah, a bit of a dip.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, you can forsake puddings for some cheese, or, yeah, that you shouldn't be fit. What? James Acaster wouldn't be happy.
Well, yeah, James Acaster wouldn't be happy, but I also wouldn't be happy.
No, it's true.
You can buy a pudding, though, if you're not, if you're making a big dish, right?
Yeah.
For the main, if you want to buy a pudding, or get someone else to bring a pudding.
Totally, and like, often people are too full for puddings, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, she says you don't always have to serve bread, because people can overdo it, but it is important with, like, mezze-style meals that you need, you have enough to kind of scoop stuff up. So I just love those little tips, and then... Yeah, it's quite interesting, really, like, the way it's kind of broken up. There's one menu called Crabs Walk Sideways, and it's all kind of, like, I think there's a crab tart in that, so it's kind of dishes that accompany that. It's, like, rye bread with radish butter, crab with potatoes, ooh, fresh raspberry lemonade, and a strawberry and buttermilk ice cream. So it is lovely the way, like, if you were entertaining, this is the book, because... You literally just have your menu here. Like, there's a summer one here, and it's courgette ricotta and pecorino fritters, salad of raw sea bass with radishes and nasturtiums, roast chicken with lemon, Marcella Hazan's recipe, and an nice apricot tart. That's great. That's a great, complete menu. So the premise is pretty genius.
Alice and Roman walked so Diana Henry could run.
And there's like a southern Italian stuff. It's lovely. I didn't really like follow a menu to make. I just kind of browsed through and found things that I wanted to make. But I think that would be a really fun thing to do for a dinner party. It does make it like a bit, yeah, I guess a bit different to navigate when you're looking at it from that perspective. Just,
yes,
I just want one thing to make. But it's quite meaty and fishy, but there are a good few vegetarian dishes in here, and a good few, obviously, because it's menus, there's a lot of desserts as well to kind of finish things off, and a few drinks as well, which is nice. I made two things. The first thing I made was a quite me dish, but again, my mum love to make a savoury tart or like a quiche thing and pastry. So I just felt like I kind of wanted to make like home food like that. So I made this cheddar, onion and spinach tart.
Ooh.
Which is just lovely. It's just really comforting food and I love it. If I could have like a bakery that only serves savoury tarts and sweet tarts, I absolutely would. The pastry for this is lovely. It's just flour, butter, two large egg yolks, so it's quite rich. You're to do it in your food processor. I only have like a mini one, which definitely could not take the volume. It was just like the bottom was the pastry and the top was just like, you know, seasoned flour. So I kind of had to take it out and finish by hand. You add a little ice cold water to that as well. And then you caramelize onions basically for, she's realistic about how long it takes, about more than half an hour. And good. There's some garlic in there as well, 6 garlic cloves. Lovely. And then you just soften some spinach, quite a lot, like a pound, which obviously goes to the equivalent of like a leaf of spinach. Yeah. And you drain that off and leave it to cool. Meanwhile, you blind bake the pastry. I did it in that case that I used for the Ravni tart, the one with all the little holes, and I was like, so help me God, yeah, this better work because I'm fragile. This is just but it was totally fine.
Like the tiny mini biscuits were fun last time, but not today.
I'm not in the mood, okay? But you put in a baking sheet to warm up in the oven that you put the tart case on, so that probably helped. Oh, and it brilliant. Helps to get like a nice base as well.
Note to self, buy you a tart case.
Is that, I mean, that one was fucking expensive, but anyway. She does an interesting thing which I like, which is when you kind of trim the pastry in the tart so it's kind of, yeah, looks nice and pretty and even, you keep that leftover pastry, and after you've blind baked it, and you bake it again for like 8 minutes without the beans in there, then you take it out of the oven and any kind of cracks that you have in the pastry, you just use that leftover,
nice.
The leftover dough, which is a great
tip. A food
tip.
Waste queen.
Love it.
We love her.
And then she's good with seasoning too. So you kind of squeeze out the water from the spinach, and mine was fucking hot still, and I was like, oh. And you season that, you add that to the onions, and then you, in a bowl, you mix eggs, yolks, so 2 large eggs and 3 egg yolks, cream and mustard. I had a bit too much of that filling, so I guess it depends on what how deep your case is. How deep is your case?
How deep is your case?
I need to know, because I made too much of the filling.
And it's funny that...
So, yes.
We're fine, lads.
No breakdowns here, no. You spread the spinach and onions on the base of the case, sprinkle on some cheddar cheese, extra mature. Love that. Always go for extra mature cheddar. And then you pour the cream mixture on top and you bake it for like 30 minutes. She says until it's just soft in the middle and golden, because it will continue to cook once it's out of the oven. You cool it for like 10 to 15 minutes and you serve it. She says it would be good with a bitter leaf salad. And I loved it. I loved it. Aww. I don't have any faults with that. The pastry was great. It held its shape. It wasn't a nightmare to work with. And the filling is just, you know, good old-fashioned, can't go wrong, cheese, onion, spinach. Yeah, and it tastes
That would be
great.
So nice for, like, a little picnic, you know, situation, wouldn't it, as well?
Yes. I feel like that's just my catnip. I just love savoury galettes and tarts and stuff. Because they're so great like that, and they're great cold, and they're nice room yes. temperature, and they're just bloody lovely. And then the second thing I made, because forced rhubarb is in season at the moment.
Yes! Ooh!
Was a rhubarb marmalade and rosemary cake.
This sounds like it's going to be great.
Was great. It was beautiful. I never fucking learn. I made it and it was still quite warm from the oven, and I was bringing it over to my friend Louise and Roberta's house, and it got kind of like, I was bringing it on a flat bottom bag, but it got a little bit smushied up on the journey, and I was like, right. Good God, why didn't I just keep it in the tin? But regardless of that, it was still, I thought, delicious, because it's quite different. You've got polenta in there, and you've got ground almonds. Ooh. And marmalade. So quite a lot of marmalade as well.
Mm.
So you make like a rosemary sugar. You bash in a mortar and pestle rosemary into some sugar to kind of infuse it. Ooh. And then you beat that rosemary sugar with butter, adding ground almonds and then eggs. There are 3 large eggs in here. And then you fold in the marmalade. So there's 200 grams of marmalade, which is obviously like best part of a jar. And you keep some back, there's more in the glaze as well. So you fold in the marmalade, orange zest, some flour, only 100 grams though, but 125 grams of polenta, some baking powder and a pinch of salt. And then you lay rosemary on the base of the tin. You spoon in the batter. And the batter is lovely. It's just really silky and beautiful. You just know it's going to be a good cake. And then you lay some more rosemary on top. Separately, you toss rhubarb. That is 300 grams. So again, it's quite a lot. It covers the entire top of the cake. You basically slice the rhubarb into 3 centimeter lengths. And you toss that with some granulated sugar, and then you spread that on top of the cake. Nice. So it was beautiful. Like, before it even went in the oven, it just looked gorgeous. And then
is it in like a round tin?
Yeah, it was like a 20 centimeter standard springform cake tin. And it was quite, mine was quite deep actually, and it needed to be, which.
How deep is your tin?
Should have used that for the quiche, for the tart maybe. You bake it for quite a while, for 120 minutes, and I think I had to bake mine, did have to bake mine a bit longer, because I had the tart in at the same time, and my oven is a piece of shit. So, mine was probably in for like an hour and a half, an hour and 40. And when it comes out, you heat 40 grams of marmalade just in a pot until it becomes syrupy, and then you push that through a sieve. And then you spread that on top of the rhubarb in the cake. Oh. So it's just beautiful and shiny. Like this lovely glaze on top. I loved it. I loved this cake. I just thought it was
I can imagine. Delicious. I can't wait to see a picture of this. Mm-hmm. Because I imagine as like a dessert for a dinner party, it would be perfect. Especially like you say, forced rhubarb is in season. So like it's so beautiful. And the marmalade.
Yeah, and the polenta and the ground almonds in the cake just made it interesting, you know, like not just your average kind of sponge. Oh, I just thought it was lovely. I thought it was really, really nice. Hers is quite, like, well done in the picture. She does say to cover it with foil, probably for the last bit of the baking. I didn't really need to do that. But, yeah, I just, if you like rhubarb, or if you see any, I would just highly recommend making this cake.
I hope we can find this recipe to put online, because that would be whilst rhubarb is around.
Yeah, and like, who knew rosemary would go so well with rhubarb? It's lovely. Yeah. Someone's that New York Times piece I read as well actually talks about how she's just really good with combinations. I think they actually use rhubarb as an example as well, that she served it with beetroot in some dish. So I just think she has a really good eye for what things go well together. So yeah, I
love that. That sounds so nice, and it sounds like this is a great book. I love that concept. I've talked about it before. I love it when cookbooks have suggested menus, like Otto Lengi does it.
Yeah,
some of his more recent books. Like, I love that.
It does work, and I think sometimes that can be like a bit of an afterthought is the menu part, but when it's the whole premise of the book, it's just great. If anyone struggles to like put things together, I think this is just lovely. And there was loads of, I need to ask you about what, if there was anything you wanted to make, any more one pot things you wanted to make, but there was loads of other stuff in here that I wanted to. There's like a fig and honey cake and pear blackberry and hazelnut, a lot of really good baking, but some lovely just kind of really simple Mediterranean dishes as well. Like there was pan con tomate, but with anchovies. That's obviously just really simple, but yeah, hook it up to my veins. Those courgette ricotta and pecorino fritters that I mentioned before just looked lovely as well. Yes. How great would that be for just a summer thing?
Yeah.
There's spinach and ricotta nudie, which looks nice. Nudie, send nudies. just love it. When I first got it, I was a bit kind of like, what's this about? It's a bit all over the place. But actually, that was before I realised it was actually individual menus. And yeah, I just think it's, I really liked it.
Do you want to rate? We want to rate separately today. In, we're going to have two different ratings. Why don't you rate yours
first,
whilst we're talking about it, and then we'll do mine.
Okay, let's do it. Do you want to talk us through our rating system, Vic?
I will talk us through our rating. So, if you're new here,
welcome.
Then welcome. How deep is your case? So every time we discuss a book, we rate it out of five, and those five things are the following. I'll talk you the things, and then I'll talk about the rating system. So they are usability and accessibility. That's one. Ingredients used, aesthetics, is it veggie friendly? Is it friendly veggie? Is it crazy veggie friendly? And inspirability. And for each episode, we change what we rate out of based on the book or the chef. So for today, we will be rating out of different things because the books have quite different vibes. So I am going to rate my book in a minute out of chicken thighs.
In a surprise to nobody.
And Hannah is going to rate...
I'm going book. To rate out of lowercase letters because there is barely a capital letter to be found in this book. It's very...
Diana Henry's gone Jay-Z. Jay-Z.
Partnership I want to see, Diana Henry and Jay-Z.
The Jay-Z menu.
Yes, it's all a bit like MySpace 2000. She does use capital letters where she needs to, i.e., you know, at the beginnings of sentences. It's just that all the recipe dishes, I love a recipe dish, all of the dishes have lowercase letters. So, usability and accessibility. I'm giving it a point because there's nothing weird in here, nothing tricky. It's fine. It's all very doable. Ingredients good. Used, also a point. I mean, there is like occasionally there's like, yeah, saffron and stuff like that, which is spenny. But for the most part, all of the ingredients are pretty easy to find. Mm-hmm. Aesthetics, I'm absolutely giving it one because I think it's really, really beautiful. And the photography is nice. So nice.
And it's furry.
It's furry. Veggie friendliness, I'm going to maybe knock a half point off because it's a lot of fish and meat in here. There is stuff, but, you know, I want to be able to make it all because it's really good.
Yeah.
And inspirability, I'm also going to give it a point because
nice.
There's just a lot of stuff in here. And it's varied, right? There's like a Brazilian-style dish in here as well as kind of French and Italian and all the baking. So I feel like it's very broad. So I'm giving it 4.5 lowercase letters out of 5.
Nice. Yay. On like the range as well, this is the same in this one in From the Oven to the Table. I keep forgetting the name of it. There's cabbage wedges with XO crumbs, which would be on my list to cook. Yeah, there's also there's a Japanese inspired dish and she starts the preamble with, I don't know anything about Japanese food. And I love that. I appreciate that. Like, you're not effing around saying that you like it. But anyway, so I am rating out of chicken thighs.
Yeah.
So usability and accessibility gets a point. Very easy to use. Very simple. Just throw it in the oven. Ingredients used, that's another one because there is nothing tricky or stressful about any of the ingredients in here. When there is, like, XO sauce, for example, for those crumbs, she says, you might have to buy it online, but it's worth it. And if you don't want to, then you just don't make that thing. aesthetics, yes, I like how kind of sexy and sultry and like dark it looks.
Yeah,
it makes a difference to what some of the other books we've done, particularly this season. So that's one. Veggie friendly, I'm also going to knock half off, because it feels like a lot of the veggie only dishes in this are sides. They're not quite whole meals.
Right.
And whilst there is some good stuff, it doesn't feel like, in the same way as the chicken stuff or like the fish, it doesn't feel quite the same. So that's half. And inspirability, for me at this time, it doesn't get a point, but that's not to say that it's bad. This is just for my opinion. I'm kind of over the one pot life for a few months, maybe. So that's 3.5 chicken thighs out of 5 chicken thighs. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, we liked Diana, I think.
We liked it, yeah. And just to say, for our cookbook circle, the first ever one we did that we talked about, I made a dish from this, which was like baked rice with olives and feta and dill.
That's right.
That was so nice. That's veggie.
That was if good.
You know, for the cheese, but so nice. Like, really interesting. Like, like those Mediterranean-y flavours.
Nice.
So yeah, yes, that's great.
I tasted that. That was good.
So we'll be back next time with a bit of a wrap up of season 2.
Yeah. Maybe some awards.
Maybe some awards.
Then we're going to do some fun ones.
Yeah, we're going to do some wild card fun episodes that are going to be fun.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes good for that.
All the things that we've said throughout the episodes. We should do an episode on that. We should do it. So yeah. Now we're finally going to do it, which will be nice. Free from the bounds of the
shackles of women.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. We love you.
Bye.
Oh, that was in unison. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and leave us a review, as it helps others to find us. You can see how recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle. And if you make anything from the books we talk about, don't forget to tag us. See you next time.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.